Hello, I'm Ed Robb from the Woodlands United Methodist Church, and we're pleased to bring you this webinar. In just over a week's time, over 3,200 people from around the country, 3,200 of you have registered. The time will go quickly, and there's much that we want to cover, and so I will be brief. Our panelists today are Adam Hamilton, the Church of the Resurrection in the Kansas City area, Paul Rasmussen, from Highland Park United Methodist Church in Dallas, Susan Kent from the Woodlands Methodists, Tom Berlin of Flores UMC in Virginia, Tom Harrison at Asbury Church Tulsa, Olu Brown, who is at Impact Church in Atlanta, Jen Stiles Williams, St. Luke's Orlando, and Rob Fuquay from St. Luke's Indianapolis. Everybody that I invited quickly responded and said, yes, that pleases me. I think we've all come to this Zoom meeting today with the same desire, and that is that we want to learn from one another. All of us desire really the same, to learn best practices when it comes to reopening our doors for worship and for officing and for all the various ministries that we're engaged in. So I will serve as the moderator, and our panelists are eager to learn and hear from one another. So I want to thank you, those of you who have sent in so many questions. We'll try to get to some of them. We won't be able to get to all of them. So with that said, let me begin with Tom Berlin and with then Adam, if the two of you will pitch in. The big question, I believe, for all of us is when and how to open. It's very complicated. And what are some of the principles or guidelines that you're using in determining your reopening strategy? So we'll sit back and listen.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I just want to thank you and your staff for putting all this together today. At Flores United Methodist, we have set three values. We wanted to keep people safe. That was our number one value. You know, do no harm and do good. Work together when you work to keep people safe. The second one was to continue to create community and Christian discipleship. The third was to serve the vulnerable. So when we talk about reopening, we're really primarily in that first space. We're going to have a lot of caution before we open to worship. And I think a lot of this depends on where you live. I'm in an area in a suburb of Washington, D.C., in Northern Virginia. Our church is located 5 minutes from an international airport. If you look at the chart for the county that I'm in, we are just at the crest, and we're just starting to come over that crest. So it's really not time for us to talk about opening. It's time for us to double down on this, what I think will be a very hybrid world that we're going to be living in for the time of now until vaccination in the general population. So we're focusing on how to deliver the best online worship and to do the things that all of us are doing. I've been so impressed by clergy and laity who have very quickly adapted to the time that we're in. So when it comes to opening, we're paying attention to our governor, we're paying attention to our bishop, and our annual conference, I think probably today or tomorrow, I've seen an early draft of about a 47-page document that they're going to release, giving us guidance. The conference guidelines that we're being offered, I think, are very solid because they can work in any context. So we're going to have a great playbook. Adam?
Thanks, Tom. And I really do want to thank Ed and your team. Really appreciate you getting the ball rolling on this. And it's actually good to see you guys too by face. I can see each of your faces and just really appreciate you doing this. And thank you to all of you who are joining us today as well. So just a quick answer. The shortest answer I can tell you is that we won't reopen before July 12th for in-person worship. And it may be not until August 16th. A lot of the same things that Thomas said, there is for us the question of safety and well-being, and that's both that is both real and perceived. And so for a lot of people, there is both the perception, is the church caring for its people? We've had some churches here in Kansas City start holding worship services or start wanting to hold worship services. And I think there's a lot of people who say, do they not care about their people? And so we both want to make sure that our people are safe, and we want to make sure that that we are known as a place that wants to keep people safe and protect people. So we're looking at that. We're also looking, as a large church, how we model for other churches, because we know there's a lot of other churches in our area who are asking, well, when's resurrection going back? And so we're trying to be, you know, trying to model this for other folks. We're also looking at the quality of the experience and asking, when is the quality of our experience in person going to be such that we would be happy to have people come back? And right now, we feel like we're doing a great job. Our team is doing a great job of online worship. And when we come back, if we're not able to sing when we come back, then I would rather have people sit at home with a coffee cup in their hands in front of their TV singing than here at church, socially distanced and not singing. So the quality of the experience is important to us. And when can we have a quality online or in-person experience? And then we recognize there are differing needs in the congregation. So we surveyed our church. We had 2,200 people, roughly 2,200 people take the survey. We found that 13% of our people are ready to come back today. Like, open the doors, we're ready to come back. Of course, our county is not allowing that yet, or not, they're not regulating churches, but they're not suggesting that for other organizations. 13% said, if you're open in June, we'll be there. So that's 26%, or 1 in 4 people who said that they would be there in June. July, the number bumped up to about 50% and then increased with a tail after that. About 42% of our people said, I don't want to come back to in-person worship until there's a vaccine or a treatment. And these are people, you know, many of our older members, as well as people who are health compromised. And so we're mindful, even when we do start back with worship, whether it's July or August, we'll start for the first 3 or 4 weeks, we'll just be a soft launch and you know, counting on very restricted numbers. And we'll talk about processes and we'll hear from everyone else in a minute. And then, maybe by the time we get into the fall, if there's not a resurgence of coronavirus, 50% attendance compared with what we were in the spring before coronavirus hit. And we think it could take a year before our regular worship attendance picks back up to where it was before. Fortunately, as with many of you, our online attendance has swollen. And part of our real concern right now is, how do we keep as many of those people as possible still coming to church when we're done with coronavirus and having online? So thanks.
Well, you segue into really where I wanted for us to go next, and that is, how are you communicating with your people? Any surveys or just how are you keeping in touch with them about when you're reopening and what criteria, et cetera? Olu, I thought I might switch over to you if I could, and for you to respond to that general topic, and then maybe Susan Kent could also join in on that.
Yeah. Right. For us, we're looking at a tentative reopening in July. So we're following the guidelines of our annual conference, our bishop. Of course, we're here in Atlanta and the CDC is here. So we get real-time data and great information. We're next door to the busiest airport in the world. The mayor of Atlanta is a part of our congregation. So we're able to get quite a bit of critical data very quickly and then implement that. So July would be the earliest for us, but the same as with Adam and Tom, if we need to delay that, we can. And so how do we communicate? We communicate virtually. So via text messaging, via emails, and also during the experiences that are online, and trying to over communicate in different ways and manage people's expectations and to help them understand that we're all in this together. And although here in Georgia, our state has reopened under the governor's order, we still, as a faith community, are concerned about the safety of people and following the guidelines of our bishop and our district superintendents and easing into it and making sure that we're prudent. And so we put together a small group of people who represent the healthcare community, even a therapist, because there's a psychological impact of trauma that people have experienced. We've got a member of the legal team because there are legal issues that we could face related to the safety of people. And so over the next 2 weeks, we're going to be looking at that internally and then coming up with a revised timeline. But currently at the earliest, it would be July.
So Olu, we're very similar to what you all have been saying too. We're taking the conservative approach. We're definitely looking at, like, Houston Methodist Hospital. Mark Boom, being the CEO, has been so gracious in being available to our churches in our area, to give as much information from the medical community that we value so much. And our survey is very interesting. Our survey results mirror what other churches in our local area have also seen. We have like 50% who are ready to go now. If we open the doors, they would come in. And so, there's definitely a little pressure there. However, We feel like we need to make the very best decisions for the most people. And when we talked about them, we asked, what were your top concern? And 47% said their top concern was the ability to still social distance. So when they come back, they still want a social distance. And so obviously that's where your logistical questions come in. How do you distance them with space, with time, you know, and going through all of those. And they also said that 60% of them listed, like, what precautions would you like us to take on so that you would feel comfortable and safe coming back? And 60% basically marked down every single one of them. But they also said that they were willing to take on precautions themselves. So yes, so the survey has been very helpful to us to weigh what our community is feeling, along with what our bishop is suggesting, what our medical community is advising. And so we're looking at probably July. We don't know. I mean, it'd be great to get in earlier, but I think to do it well, just as Adam said, we're looking at what is the experience. And so if the experience is just not the same when you come back, then maybe we would be pushing a little too soon. So July looks like a good target date for us.
Thank you, Susan. Jen, I'm going to turn to you if I could, and then Rob, if you'll also join in on this one. And that is this whole idea of social distancing. And I know some of the churches in our area have already opened. Our Catholic communities have opened, and as well as some others. I hear the interesting ways they're doing this, but you know, when we do reopen, I'd imagine there'll be some guidelines that we have to, or we will want to follow in terms of the distancing and the number of people we allow in. What is you all's thinking on that?
So we're in a unique position that we're in sort of the triangle of theme parks here in Orlando. And so we're really utilizing the people that are a part of our churches, that our church that is working in theme parks to help us guide with in terms of safety, sanitation, social distancing, et cetera. And while we're thinking about reopening and what that looks like, we're also trying to ask first, what are the physical and emotional needs of our community that have been incredibly hard hit with all our theme parks closing down in a historical way. And so we'll do social distancing in terms of whatever we do. We're rearranging rooms, we're rearranging venues to understand capacity. We're creating precautions that our congregation has answered they want. But we're also trying to, online worship is the last thing we're thinking about. What are the things that we have to do on our campus to help people's physical and emotional needs first, which lives into the do no harm and do all the good you can. And we're attending to the ordinances of God online incredibly well. So let's figure out those other things that allow people to social distance and get in their emotional needs met.
So we started thinking about what does it mean to be socially distant in the sanctuary in the chapel where we have two of our Sunday morning services. And one thing we're blessed with here is we have a lot of Purdue University engineers. You can't stay socially distant from these folks. There's so many of them. So they came in and analyzed our space, and it was actually very surprising because if you think about keeping a 6-foot proximity north, south, east, and west, it turned out that we reduced our capacity by about 80% in our worship venues. So that starts to go back to the point that Adam made about looking at what is the experience people would have when they come back. And that's a big factor too, as we just look at reopening. A lot of people probably would think that worship is going to look like and feel like it did March the 8th. And we realized that would not be the case. You know, when you start talking about no choir, probably not having children's ministry for a while, sitting at a distance from folks, maybe wearing face masks, your experience is just not going to be close to what we had before. So that socially distant issue became a big factor when we started thinking about what it's going to look like in a room. And then the added complication of what happens when you say, okay, we can't have any more than this number in our venue, 250 in our sanctuary, and more than that show up? Or do people have to start registering to have a, you know, to be in attendance on a Sunday morning? So that adds to the complication.
Ed, can I add on there? This, I'll ask other people, but this whole RSVP thing goes against our core values of inclusivity and acceptance and hospitality. So I'm really struggling with the RSVP system and reservation. So if you all are doing it, I'd love to hear about that.
Jen, can I, no, I, can I just be with you in spirit on that? That is something I've struggled, and I know a lot of churches are doing that, and if they feel good about it, then that's good. But I really struggle with the sense of, does that look like a members only club? Maybe I'm just too sensitive to it, but that is definitely something I'm wrestling with as well. Maybe someone's doing it really, really well. I don't know, but I'm with you on that.
Panel, do you know about a third of the questions that were submitted, and we had just scores upon scores upon scores and yet more scores of questions that came in, but about a third of those were directed toward this whole concept of the experience. And Adam, you referenced this earlier. If they, you know, if they can't sing, I just assume they'll be at home and they can sing. But about a third came, were directed toward, what about choirs or congregational singing? And, you know, we've been having some, well, literature, I've read articles, I'm sure you have, about how it can just be, you know, dispersing, you know, these viruses. And I don't know, what have you all thought about that? So Paul Rasmussen, I'm going to look to you first, and Tom Harrison, you know, when you come back, if you even have a choir, I mean, so many don't, they're just contemporary, but what about that? And what about congregational singing? If you two would speak to that.
Sure. Happy to. Hey, first of all, I want to not just thank you all, but all the folks that are watching. One thing has been so cool about this is it's hard to get around to see how other churches do things in the normal rhythm of life. But now that we're all virtual, you can go to any church you want on any Sunday or usually see a rebroadcast. And we're learning so much from so many different churches. I mean, churches the size of 2 people to the size of 2,000 people, the level of innovation that's flowing through the connectional system has been pretty awesome. So thanks, everybody, for being so creative. Yeah, we've got a lot of folks that are worried less about safety and more about singing. And I guess they're somehow tied together. And the biggest complaints that we have come from the people that don't even like to sing anyway, but they sure want singing in the service. And so that's a priority. We've got to figure out experientially how in the world we're not going to do a service without out singing. I don't see that happening. So we're going to wait. We're just going to wait until we can get back in as normal as possible. Some of you have said you don't
Tom,
have,
you said not till when? I missed that.
We don't have a date. We don't have a date. We have not set a date. We're not going to set a date. I tell everybody I'll update them at the end of the month. And so I update the congregation weekly by email or by video, but I'm not updating about attending worship until the end of May. And then at the end of May, they'll get another update on where we are with coming back. But we've just chosen that tack to not give everybody a date. But I have the blessing of, we have no pressure. And some of you I know have an enormous amount of pressure to open back up. We have no pressure. We got over 2,000 members that are over 60 years old, and they're concerned, and the people that are south of 60 are concerned about them. And so that's a good space to be in because we don't feel like we have to open. And we want to make sure that the experience, as so many of you mentioned, is a positive one. And so I don't see us doing a service where we're not able to sing. I'm a little bit like Adam. I'd rather them be at home with the coffee trying to sing in their own living room than mandated behind a mask not able to sing. And we know that we're going to have masks. On the RSVP system, though, we are, when we do open, what we have is a plan in place, but we're not going to pull the trigger or execute the plan until we're ready. And we have no idea when that will be. We're going to try and see if it works on the RSVP system to do one, but we're leaving a lot of space in there for visitors to RSVP. And then we're rotating it by alphabet. So it's not first come, first serve. You don't feel like you're going to a concert and the only way you can get tickets is to scalp them. We want to try as broadly as possible to give as many people access to that system. If it doesn't work, we'll pull it. So we try to create a hybrid. But the singing is a big deal for us, as I'm sure it is for you. And until we're able to sing, the online seems to be a favorable option, and we're going to ride that out for as long as it's effective.
Tom, you want to add to
that? Yeah, please? I think the choir will probably be the last thing that we will do. Just as you have referenced, the projection, you know, as people sing, that's probably the best way to spread things. So that'll probably be the last thing. In Oklahoma, we're last in a lot of things, but we seem to be really at the top as far as not being affected by COVID-19. And even in our region, Oklahoma, yesterday, we had no deaths in the state. And so First Baptist in Tulsa is going to open May 31st. And so we're going to watch and see what happens. And again, same kinds of things that have been discussed here. We have counties in Oklahoma that they've not had any reported COVID cases. And so I think one of my guiding principles, and we talked with our bishop, he met with several of us last week, and he said, I'm not going to give you a mandate that it's all going to be like this, that one size does not fit all. And so one church may do this and one church does that. One's in rural, and I think of the other congregations that I've served in the state of Oklahoma, and it's all across the board. And what works here would not work at another setting. So we'll be flexible, nimble, try to be responsive, and like everybody said, try to learn, adapt, try to find the best practices. It's a great opportunity. And one of the things that we've been trying to do to connect with our folks is that we're calling them and we're doing some reassignments of jobs. So this was your job, this is your new job. You're calling people. So that's another way, just actually talking to people. What a strange concept, you know? Not just electronic, but here it is, voice. And what I found, I don't know about y'all, I found that people, one of the things that I started doing in 2008 was calling people on their birthdays. And so it's just one of those little things I do, and I call the members of the church. And about half the time, and particularly younger people that don't pick up, what I found is that for the first time, people want to talk, and they really want to talk. And it's been a really interesting thing. And I thought, this is a great ministry opportunity. So we can learn, grow, improve. There's pastoral care that needs to enter into this context. And people are really, really open. That's what we're finding. So we'll probably open maybe earlier than anybody here. So we'll just wait and see. That's because of a reflection of our community.
I think, Tom, one question that you had sent in yourself was among the panel, you're curious, have any of us at our particular churches had anyone who's come down with the COVID-19 or who's died from it? Not the community, but your church. We've been fortunate we've not. Adam, yeah.
Yeah, we've had five. So we've had three or four that were actual members, and at least five that I know of, and two others that were family of members, who had one of whom had been here for confirmation just 2 weeks before coming down with COVID-19. So we have had folks who have died from this.
Rob,
who else has had? I see Rob.
You go ahead. We've had a dozen deaths of members from COVID or COVID-related, and we believe extended families, so just beyond our congregation, upwards of 30. Mm.
Yeah, we've had at least a dozen church members that have had it. We had one who was on a ventilator for 11 weeks, though, and just got out. So we're celebrating that victory. But we haven't had anyone die yet, praise God, but we've had many that have had it that we know of.
It, you know, I spoke earlier about inviting a therapist into our conversation about reopening. Part of what we're hearing is that people have experienced trauma in losing loved ones. You know, a person who helped us plant our church 13 years ago, her grandmother had COVID and her father had COVID. They were both in the same hospital. Her father died. Her mother was still holding on and didn't even receive the news that her son had passed away. And then she discovered that her mother had COVID. On top of that, she also had a 3-month-old baby to care for. And so what we're finding is, in May is Mental Health Awareness Month. I think that community related to mental health is going to have to be invited into our conversations, because people are experiencing trauma right now. Some are experiencing delayed trauma, and months and years from now will have some symptoms. But that would be my encouragement to those who are on the call, not to deny the mental health community a part at the table as you discuss reopening and continuing post-reopening.
I want to call on Tom Berlin. Thank you, Olu. I'll just say from our experience, though we've not had anyone, to my knowledge, I think I would know, either contract or die of COVID, we've had numbers of people who've had to go to the hospital for emergencies that are sometimes significant, and the family members who cannot attend them, be with them, nor the pastors. They've been very strict. And of course, that is so difficult to know for those people. So there's all kinds of way this is rippling out and affecting the congregation. Tom?
Yeah, I think this is a really relevant topic that you just raised, because for everyone watching, this is the level of stakes we're talking about. You're talking about making a set of decisions where one day you could be looking at how many people in your church contracted the illness and how many potentially died from the illness. There's a really interesting article by a pastor in Canada who talks about the one decision, ministry decision, she wished she could get back. And it was to go one worship service and celebration too far. And she didn't cut it off. Half the congregation, 42 people, half the congregation contracted COVID and two died. The stakes are really high. And there's a lot of process we can talk about. We can talk about creating flow rates, you know, X-ing out pews. And I know on our Forward Virginia website here in our state, they've got a whole section for churches that's really solid. But even if you do all that, think about the one person who's sick who walks in who says, I'm not going to wear a mask. Think about the one person who says, I don't feel like walking that way. I'm going to walk this way. And that may be a member. It may be somebody who's visiting your church. We don't know who it is. I don't mean to be gloom and doom, but I do think it's really important for leaders at this time not to respond reflexively to the demands of some saying it's my right to go to church, but to think instead as a community leader. What we do connects to every part of the community in which we live. I've got a daughter that works in a hospital in Austin, Texas, and I've been so grateful for everybody in that community who's been thinking about people like her that are working with us every day.
Well, all well said. It sounds like we're all away from physical worship for some time. So that brings up questions of sacraments. And it'd be interesting to see different, you know, thoughts having to do with whether or not online experience with Holy Communion. What about baptisms? Because we each year have, I forget the number, Susan, but it's usually about the same, around the 225 number, if I remember, of confirmands and numbers of the, how do we go forward with all of these matters? I see Adam's hand up. Adam?
I was going to just mention with regard to Holy Communion, I know there's been a great debate. I've watched it and read what people have said and appreciate those differences. I'm just going to share my experience of this. The first Holy Communion Sunday, when we invited people online to have bread and wine in preparation for communion. And we have people light a candle at the beginning of their, you know, of the service online at their home. So we say, you know, this is not entertainment. We are gathered together across the miles. And when it came to the Eucharist and consecrating the Eucharist and then inviting people to take and eat, I can only say it was a mystery. And it was a profound moment where I felt our congregation was connected. I can't explain it. It was this, but there was this sense of connection with all of our people in that moment and breaking the bread and sharing the cup that was more powerful than I have ever experienced in our sanctuary. And I got call after call and text from people saying, I just felt connected. I felt like we were together in this one moment, sharing in the Lord's Supper, and that we were family at that moment. It was awesome. And so I understand there's a lot of theological arguments that we can make. It's interesting when Jesus took the Last Supper, when he took the Passover Seder and transformed it into the Last Supper, This was a meal that was eaten at home. It wasn't eaten in the synagogue. It was eaten at home. And it was eaten usually once a year. And then the Jewish people at every meal remember the Passover Seder. And I think that was, for me, that was probably more of what Jesus had in mind, that every time you break bread, you remember me. And I am present with you, and you know all of the other things that we talk about in the Eucharist. So I appreciate the arguments, but I will just say it was a very powerful and profound experience in our place that day.
I will say that we have ordained clergy on our team. We have 13. I'm saying that to say there's enough to have different opinions. People may be surprised, but we have a lot of different opinions in our church. But I've never seen that manifest itself like the idea of what do we do about Holy Communion, whether we can do that online or not. I won't go any further. but anyway, I'm interested to hear from all of you, okay?
Can I ask a question? Paul's going to jump in.
I just have a question. Of the panel, I'd be curious to know how many are presently doing communion online?
How many want to or will?
Okay. I'm curious. Thank you. They couldn't. Are you continuing to do it?
No. Adam? No, I'm just asking us not to, so not.
This is Tom down here, Berlin.
So, Tom? So we've jumped in and done communion, and I think it's trusting in the power of the Holy Spirit to make a means of grace happen. And we've also done in the last two weeks, a renewal of baptism, inviting people to walk through prayer and liturgy with baptism and recognizing, inviting people to hold something that represents something that's brought them comfort and grounding that they'll carry into whatever the new normal is, and redefining for people what is an outward and visible sign of an inward and spiritual grace. And so we are trying to create spaces, ways in which people's home becomes their sanctuary, and to tear down the walls between sacred and secular in people's lives so that they feel and sense the presence of the Holy Spirit within their homes. And so I think it's really important to find ways and new understandings of how to give these sacraments and trust in the Holy Spirit.
Ed, I would just add to that, there's a practical element to the theology of it, because I know it's debatable, but there is a practical benefit. We know from studies about youth who into adulthood tend to leave the faith, and that the amount of time we get people into the church is no predictor of how long they stick with the faith, but how much the church gets into the home is a proven predictor in how well people stick with the faith. And I'll just say that when we had communion on Maundy Thursday, one of our associates did the service from home. And so Susan and I got to be in communion at home with Susan's dad, my father-in-law, Bishop Richard Wilkie. And I'll just say that having communion is kind of like what Adam shared. There was a mysterious experience of worshiping as a family and sharing the sacrament as a family together that I could just imagine if this is going on in a lot of homes, especially with children and younger children. This time has to be yielding a pretty powerful impact. This is just a shameless plug that is an aside, but we've got our father-in-law with us, and he's not able to do a whole lot anymore like he once did, preaching, writing, but he can write letters. And I said, okay, I tell you what, I'm going to promote to people, if they have folks in their church who've taken disciple and they're going through a tough time, let me know, and I'm going to bring the names and addresses home to him. And he's going to be glad to let his ministry right now be writing letters to people. So if you've got disciple people in your churches, those who are listening, and you would appreciate them getting a letter from Bishop Wilkie, just a note of encouragement, email that to me at St. Luke's. Okay, enough said.
No, that's, I appreciate that very much. More people have thought of this so many times. I mean, he was a bishop, but it was disciple that has just touched people around the world and continues to. And it's certainly enriched our church, I can tell you. Here's a question that came in from a Michelle, I'm not sure which state, that says, what criteria should we use to determine when is the right time to open children's programs, and what restrictions should we have in place? Who'd like to tackle that one?
I can
say no one who cares about the children. Okay.
I can say how we're approaching that. We are utilizing the county health officials in the Indianapolis area quite a bit to share data with us and give us advice about any concerns related to children spreading coronavirus. And a big concern here is in terms of restarting the economy, children being able to go back to school, it seems to have a huge impact on that. Parents being able to go to work with their kids in school. And so as a church, that adds to our concern about not doing anything that could contribute to new restrictions having to go into place. So we're using a lot of the information from county health officials.
Ed, one of the things that we have made a decision on, kids will come towards the very end. They'll be the last group that are going to be part of coming back. But we're going to try to be innovative with the way we do Vacation Bible School. So we have canceled it for the summer, and we're going to try to get families to do this on their own in the home. Hopefully, it could be, you know, maybe it could turn into a backyard VBS, you know, and invite your neighbors and that sort of a thing. But again, goes back to trying to help the families, you know, as we've talked about. That's kind of the, if you're familiar with the orange concept, the church and the home, red and green, you know, end up with orange somewhere in between. And so that's, we would like this again, I can't overemphasize this enough. This is a great opportunity. And so, and one of the things that we've done at Asbury to get into this is that we were approached by two of the local TV stations to air a TV segment. And so we've done that twice. We're going to do it probably two more times. We did it before Easter, the Saturday before Easter. We did it the Saturday night before Mother's Day. We'll do it the Saturday night before Memorial Day, and probably the Saturday night before Father's Day. And so it's just, there's so many different things that this has opened up. I think Wesley would be absolutely ecstatic, you know. New wine, you know, old skin. Some of the old skins need to die. And so it's a great opportunity. But we're going to try this with children's ministry, be innovative and creative.
We're the same. I just like to say, so our children's ministry, they have worked tirelessly to come up with some phased plan for bringing the children back. I mean, it's basically a novel. But the long and short of it is there's too much unknown. We're not going to provide children's programming on site together until we know so much more. We're looking to the school district, which still has not made a decision. They don't know exactly what to do or how to do it yet either. So we're not about to say that we know better. But again, just like you, Tom, our children's ministry, they've gone like, how can we actually do this well? And because we have some resources at our church where we can record, we can bring great music, great elements, film it, and then make it available for VBS for the other the churches that don't quite have those resources. So just like you, we're trying to be very innovative and then try to share that with other churches so that they can have those resources as well.
To follow up on what Tom Harrison said and what Susan just said as well, it's very, it's just such an important time where your parents are going to become the key disciplers of their children if you equip them. So we did something called Camp Together in the month of May. We yoked that with a sermon series. We're going to do the same thing with Vacation Bible School. It went to hundreds of people. It went to 14 states and Canada. We had requests for it. We're using Nearpod, which is an educational platform that makes for more creative elements that are used by our children's ministry. And then I would encourage clergy to think about doing separate videos for parents to give them the background that they can then use as educators. Give them that deeper dive exegesis. Give them, you know, tell them the cultural context of what they're working with. Let them be the experts and let them impress their kids, not just with a bunch of information, but with a real knowledge of the Bible. You learn more by teaching. And I think we have a chance to disciple our parents in ways that they've never done before.
Yes, Jen.
Yeah, I think Tom brings up an interesting, I think the question of reopening is the wrong question. I think it's how do we maximize understanding this is not, as the writers have said, a blizzard or a snowstorm, but how do we prepare for a new ice age? And the old days of the way we did youth and children's ministry and even adult discipleship are not going to be here for a long time. So how do you redeploy your volunteers and your leaders in new ways that, like Tom said, empower them to be the leaders of other people in virtual ways? Because virtual's not, as we've said a gajillion times, not the opposite of real. Yeah.
No, that leads to a question that came in advance. I'm seeing, I guess you all can see the chats that come in, I presume on your screen, all kinds of questions. But this one came in advance from a Kenneth from California who asks, is it time to invest in upgrading equipment and not just, capital letters, not just returning to traditional worship experience? I don't think he means traditional versus contemporary, but I think he meant to the normal worship experience. Adam, you want to talk to us? I know you've already, prior to this, been very strong in online.
Yeah, we've had online for 10 years. But what we realized was in online in the past, we were inviting people into our live stream from a worship. And that meant that they were sort of observing or looking over our shoulder. You have stand and greet, and that doesn't do anything for the, it disconnects people at home. You have the Eucharist, and they aren't doing anything, and they're sitting there for 10 minutes waiting for the service to come back. And we don't look in the cameras, we look at our people, as it should be during in-person worship. But what we've begun doing here is this forced us to have a service that was specifically designed for online. And as we did that, we changed a lot of things. We looked to see what disconnects with people at home and how do we do this better for the people who are at home. And we produced, I think, a much better worship service that's more engaging for them. We have people from all of our campuses. So we have 5 campuses. We have the campus pastors from each of those campuses in our, leading our worship. So every campus sees somebody from their campus. Worship leaders, we have, last Sunday we had Mozart in a string quartet for the postlude while we had our praise, you know, our modern band leading our opening songs. And then we're integrating that. So we're writing arrangements for the string quartet. We'll have the organ play, you know, and it's actually been really cool. But what we've said is going forward, we're not going backwards on online. We think that, you know, as with many of you, we've seen a tripling of our worship attendance. And many of these are people who weren't going to church before. Some of them are people in small churches don't have church, but many of them were not. And I saw a question run through here. How do you count? So I will just say we look to see if somebody's with us for 30 minutes, they worshiped with us. If they're with us for 3 seconds on a Facebook stream, they did not worship with us. And so we look at 30 minutes or more is actually counted in being in worship. But we're determined to have an online. So we're going to now be, in the past, we were a church, and you've heard this from other people. We were a church that had an online service. Right now we're an online church that is looking at when we bring back an in-person service. And we anticipate we might have 2-to-1 people who are worshiping online to people in person in the years to come. So we're really trying to invest in doing great work there. We're also, I would say this, there are 3 questions we're asking at this time. What needs to stop as a result of what we're doing, what needs to change, and what needs to continue? And we're asking that about every one of our ministries. There are a lot of things that we have done that we've needed to stop, but we were too chicken to do it. We were too afraid of how many people's feelings get hurt, who'd get mad, how many people leave the church. Well, right now we can't do any of those things. And so we're like, this is an awesome opportunity for us to look at. So we're restarting the church. We're thinking about, this is a restart. And we're going to see what are the things we absolutely have to have up front and what things have we done that we need to change. And this is a great opportunity for us to say, you know, we just can't do that anymore. And so blame it on coronavirus, but it's an opportunity for the right kind of changes. And I was reading lots of articles about small businesses, and the small businesses that evolve during this time, the small businesses that were already struggling, many of them are not going to make it. the small businesses that are willing to evolve and change are going to have the chance for a bright future. And I think that's true for our churches as well. It's going to be a different world coming out of this.
Tom Harrison.
Does it make anybody else think of Wesley? I submitted myself to be more vile. This is that kind of a moment. We didn't anticipate it. Here it is. And out he goes. And here we go with a whole new movement. And so that's kind of what I'm thinking. That's why I just like to frame this as positively as we can. We could just say become morose and this is terrible. And, but I think there's a whole different way to look at it and say, this is one of the greatest opportunities we've ever had. To look at things in a new light. And so I know it's hard. I've never worked harder in my life. We're still doing the governance things, but we're still trying to do this pastoral context. I'm grateful I have a staff. If I were a pastor and had nobody else with me, I think it could be really depressing. It's all on you. And you could, I'm concerned about that because I've been in those congregations and this is a real hard time. So I think the connection serves well. This is a great time to support one another too.
We've got about 14 minutes and I think 60 is really about the right number. And so that's, we'll bring it to a close here in about 14 minutes. What you touched on, Tom Harrison, I've wondered, and that is maybe we ought to talk among ourselves because it'll spill over to those listening. And that is, there's a degree of isolating that occurs. I mean, I don't know about you all, but we've had our church closed, our offices, and only most, essentially needed personnel are there, such as media team. Okay. And so, I'm just officing at home, but the virtual worlds were able to do that. However, you don't have that, sort of proverbial water cooler, and you don't have those interchanges. I mean, we do in one way, in other ways we don't. But how's this experience been for you? Do you find that you have more time or less time? I'll say this, I've played more golf than I have in a long time. I think I still work plenty hard and are diligent, but it's like in some ways, I'm thinking, I've been asking myself, okay, how am I going to be a different person coming out of this pandemic? What will I have learned from it? What do I want to take from it? Maybe we could talk about that for a few moments.
Well, I'll jump in there, Dr. Rob. Kind of tying in what you just asked, and with what Adam and Tom were just talking about with sort of looking at church differently, something that we found out, which I thought was really interesting, we look at our numbers like for worship, Sunday morning, how many people we don't look at the 3 second either. We look for the longer viewpoint. But what we found surprisingly, let's just say we had 2,500 people watch Sunday morning, 9:30. What we found is that from Sunday evening to Tuesday, the number doubled. So if we're just looking at that 1 hour, we're missing that we have twice as many people actually coming and worshiping, just worshiping at a different time. So I think that just lends itself to the question of how are we really taking advantage of the digital world being another door into the church. And I love Clay Scroggins recently shared about how important it is to shift our resources to that digital foyer, because we have such an ability to bring people in, to provide people that way in where maybe they didn't have before. So what I have found is that the creativity of our team just in looking at things differently, giving ourselves permission to stop and ask the questions we haven't had time to ask before, has been really great. And the creativity has been amazing. So,
Ed, I'll mention a couple of things back on the technology piece. Through a social media platform, we're doing some beta testing around Dallin Worship. And I know there were some questions about that. And so imagine someone who's in a nursing home or is not in a position to fully utilize a video, there's an opportunity to do dial-in. So it's not only high tech, but it's also low tech. And so there's an opportunity for that. Around change, I think as an organization, a church, or a business, customers, congregants aren't upset that we weren't ready for COVID-19. They will be upset if we don't change because of COVID-19. So that means the church has to change, the organization has to change, and also we as leaders have to change. And so I'm thinking a lot about the leader that I am and have been. I can't go back as the same leader and expect results as well as our team. You know, most churches in the United States of America are 75 people. And so there are people who are watching who don't have staff, but it still means a volunteer, officer of your church, or a staff person. We all have a responsibility to change. And then I'll say a last piece about self-care as a pastor, as a leader. You know, I've always believed, you've heard me talk about mental health, always believed in therapy. I have a personal therapist. But to be honest with you, in this season, I've upped my appointments with my personal therapist because there's just so much that we're having to manage. And so although from a calendar perspective, there may be some gaps, from an emotional stress perspective, we're actually handling more than we've ever handled before. And as leaders, that trickles throughout the church, it trickles throughout the business, it trickles throughout the organization, and we can only lead as healthy as we are. So just some thoughts about change and personal self-care.
Very well said, very open and honest and helpful. So thank you on that. About 9 minutes here, maybe a few random questions. One that came in had to do with payroll protection plan. Have any of your churches taken advantage of the payroll protection plan? Has it worked for you? Rob? Okay. Tom? Yeah.
Ed, I might respond. We took just under $1 million and we sent it back. The government, we felt, we didn't know what they're going to do next. And so I've been in this present appointment for 27 years, and I've never had so much struggle within my boards over any issue more than this. And they were, you know, strongly divided. We want to access the money and make sure that, you know, everybody, the staff is intact. And other people said, you know, no, this is, you know, take money from the government. There's a separation of church and state. I've never seen anything in our church governance that has created more dissatisfaction than this. And so that is in part why we sent the money back with interest.
Well, we've tried to take advantage of, we're sort of on the other side of that, of, you know, any stimulus funds that we were, that we qualified for. One of them we did not qualify for because it had to do with number of employees, and if you're over 500 employees, and that includes part-time equivalents, which to me is sort of crazy. But anyway, that one didn't work for us. But we've had a different approach. We've taken advantage of whatever we can. Are there other questions that we've got about maybe 7 minutes here before we close, that, or any thoughts that we want to share? Paul Rasmussen.
I just want to give a word of encouragement to the small churches, of which there are so, so many. And sometimes when we're talking about online worship and video, there's an assumption that you have to have all kinds of technology and equipment. Do not let that get in your way. You need a cell phone and a volunteer. Don't let the priority be quality of your production capabilities. You literally, in fact, there's almost a charm to it. If you look at things like TikTok, the video production level is not very high, but they're very, very popular. So you don't need the kind of equipment that you think you need to do it. Just try it. And if you need help at all, I speak for our church, but I could probably speak for everybody on this panel and beyond, reach out. Those of us that do have resources in the tech world would be more than happy. It'd be a blessing, in fact, to help you in any way that we can. With content, with, you know, if there's a way to help you with equipment, we'll do that. If just reach out to us, and we'd love to talk to you about what we can do. But don't be intimidated because there's only one of you and you don't have a budget for technology. You can do this for far less expense than you think you can, and you have a lot of big churches that would be more than willing to help you do it. The second thing with that is, because it's an online viewing experience, you know, in the past when you took off, it was your normal paradigm was you'd have to have someone come in physically and replace you. You don't have to do that anymore. You can, because people are watching it online, you can actually borrow content. So if you need a time off, if you don't have any clergy to help you and you're desperate for a break, pull the ripcord and take a sermon from any one of us that are doing sermons online all the time and use the material all you want. This is the connectional system at its finest. And so leverage it. And if we can help you in any way, do not hesitate to reach out.
I want to thank you for sharing that, Paul. Those are some of the most important words spoken today. And, you know, we're all in this together, and we need to get through it together. And this is an opportunity for the church and the United Methodist Church to really shine and to be exemplar, and hopefully to attract more and more people into the presence of God. I'm going to go for final words, and I think it might be good just to go around the, I don't know if you're all the same in every screen, but Paul, any additional Paul Rasmussen final words? I don't know how you do any better than what you just said, but.
That's all I got. I wish we knew more than we did. We don't.
Thank you. I'll go around the horn here. Tom Harrison's next on my screen.
Yeah, thanks again, Ed, for doing this. And I do want to, again, reiterate those, the panelists right here, we're kind of the outliers in this, in that we're pastoring in large congregations, and this is where I've ended up. It's not where I started, and I think the one size does not fit all, and that we just need to be sensitive. I appreciate what Paul had to say about that we would like to help. If there's a way we can help, that's one of the things we can do. And so, my heart really goes out to those that are pastoring all by themselves.
Thank you. Adam.
Thank you. A couple things I would share. One is when it comes to finances, I know that was a big issue that came up. I found that people are more willing to give when they see their churches making a difference in the community. So when you can highlight, and if you send out an e-note, I do every Friday, and I say, here's what we did this week to impact the community. Here's what we did in the food drives. Here's what we did to serve nurses. Here's what we did to reach out to medical professionals. We post pictures. I try to include that in the sermons. And when we are telling people, here's what you did together as a congregation, we've found people really responded to that. We also sent a letter to all of our lead donors and just said, here's where we are. Here's where we are financially. Here's what's going on right now. Here's our concerns for the future. You know, we know some of you may be in a place where you're losing your businesses, and that's okay. But if you're in a place where you can, you know, continue to be faithful in what you're giving, and they stepped to the plate and they gave over and above. Many of them fulfilled their pledges already and gave over and above, recognizing that some of our members have lost their jobs and can't give anything at all. So those things are really important. We're also trying to involve as many people as possible in volunteering, and they can do that in writing letters. We've written letters and cards and sent meals to all the doctors and nurses across Kansas City, putting signs up in front of hospitals and everywhere else from the church. Anytime I'm volunteering with my kids to go do something for the church as a witness for Christ, I feel more engaged. I feel more a part of it, and I want to contribute both my time and my talent. And the last thing I'd say is just, as you heard from several other people, high touch. We've called everybody in the church. We're sending out handwritten notes to everybody in the church. We send personalized emails to everybody in the church. I mean, real personal emails to everybody in the church. It's all hands on deck. And I think our people feel more connected. We have been more connected to our congregation in the last 2 months than we have ever been before. And our people feel like they're making a bigger impact on the city than they've ever done before. And that's led to a real, you know, vitality in our church, even though, I mean, one of our staff said, Dan Intels said, you know, this is the greatest ministry we've ever had in 2 months in our entire history. And we've done it while the doors are locked. And it's been pretty, pretty exciting. So anyway, just high touch and let your people know the good stuff that you're doing.
Gosh, so well said. Thank you so much, Adam. Tom Berlin.
Yeah, I just want to encourage everybody, take care of yourself. Leaving right now is hard, and it doesn't matter what size church you're in, it's just difficult. But you can convince yourself that you're isolated, and you're not. You're not. Pay attention to the Holy Spirit. I had somebody's name pop into my mind, a colleague who lives in another part of our state, is a United Methodist pastor. I wrote his name down, and it got carried over my to-do list for a couple days in a row. And then I'm walking one evening, and on my cell phone, he texts me out of nowhere. And I thought, you know what, that's a conversation the Lord wants us to have. And I just felt so encouraged by the time that conversation ended. if God's doing that in my life, I know God's doing it in yours. You know, you can meet people and take a walk. Friends, I've discovered there's a thing called the weekend. We pre-tape, and then we get 2 days in a row. It is awesome. And so, you know, we may never open up again, but my find ways to take care of you. I've been reading a book about Winston Churchill during the Blitz, 1939 to 1941, in that space. Churchill went away almost every weekend, gathered with some friends, and had deep conversations. He had lighthearted times, and it's what allowed him to be one of the greatest leaders of his time. Make sure you're doing that too.
Thank you so much, Tom. Yeah, I've been teasing folks saying, I'm going to put our campus up for sale. We're just going to be all virtual. It's gone better than I would ever have thought. Jen.
Yeah, with what everyone said, but also to recognize that, yeah, Rob or Ed, I don't believe you're wrong. I mean, I think we need to start seeing our campus as not a third place, but the third place, because there's other ways that the Holy Spirit is really calling us to do ministry connected as a Methodist church in the city, helping one another, staying connected, filling in the gap for one another in our community, and considering our campus, if it's used for anything first and foremost, its deployment of mission to help people, especially those most vulnerable in this pandemic, whether it's age or people of color or people in poverty. I think that's the work Wesley calls us to.
Rob?
As we've wrestled with getting back to this issue of when do we come back, the leaders of our church, especially our lay leader, our governing board leader, posed some clarifying statements that really helped us frame things. One of them was this: what if we couch our reopening strategy with the mission and the values of our church? Our mission statement begins, "We're an open community of Christians. Openness is a big value." So what if we say we're going to reopen when we can be as fully open as possible? We don't have to tell a segment of our church, we're asking you to stay home. We offer ministries to children so we can fully welcome families. That was very helpful. Another was not feeling the need to declare more than we have to at the time. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a date yet when we're going to try to be back in church. Our bishop had said, churches in Indiana, please not resume in-person worship until June 14. So that's what we're doing. And then we're going to come back, I think, like Paul said earlier, at the end of May, and then issue a statement about what the next phase will look like after June 14th. Another one was not having unnecessary risk. Now, that sounds obvious, but when we think about, you know, at any time in the next year, there's probably going to be an element of risk before there's a vaccine and before this virus is completely eradicated. So what's unnecessary? And right now we realize there's not a pressing need to have to be back. We're gonna analyze data and do all we can to make sure it is as low risk as possible. And then we talked about we call our team that's working on our plan the next normal. And somebody in the last meeting said, I think we ought to make that normals plural, because we need to help people think there's not some invisible line we'll cross over and then it's going to be a normal stage for an ongoing period of time. It's probably going to be very short stages that this is what it looks like. A few months later, this is what it looks like. There will probably be a couple of normal stages before the end of this year, and who knows, in 2021. So those were a few things that helped us a lot.
You know, this has sort of been a wake-up call to all of us of what we know and preach, but now it's, you know, we're actually recognizing more acutely, and that is when we think we're in control and we think we have everything scheduled, we're really not in control, and how the whole world can just change, and who could have thought. We have two more to hear from, and then we'll say goodbye to everyone. Susan Kent.
So I would say, for me, I think one of the best things that we can do right now is tell stories. I mean, that's what the church does so well, is sharing stories, and through the stories, that's how you encourage one another, you inspire one another. And so I think that's what we can do, whether that's through a blog, a post, you know, a sermon, whatever. I think there are so many ways that we can do that, and that allows us to bring that connection to the people who may feel like they are isolated or or they're missing out on, you know, their normal. So I just think that we can all do that. It doesn't matter what size church or what your platform is. We can tell the stories.
Thank you. Olu, you are a wrap-up man.
Well, affirming what everyone said and helping people to remember we're living in the greatest evangelistic season of our lifetimes. So let's lean into it. Stay encouraged. Stay confident in God. Stay confident in your own leadership and all the leaders who are around you. We're going to come out of this stronger, better, wiser than we've ever been before.
Thank you so much. And for all of you who've, I don't know the phrase, tuned in today to this Zoom, we want to thank you. And you can let friends who did not know about it or could not tune in know it. It'll be where they can access it. It's all been recorded. For each of you who participated, thank you. God's best to every single one of you. Bye-bye.